Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
Sonia, we are leaving the world of the Avengers and the Avengers Endgame, and we're returning to the world of the Spider-Man animated series.
The Neogenic Nightmare.
That's right. We are on the second season, the seventh chapter, an episode titled Enter the Punisher, where lots of crazy shit happens.
And we get to see the Punisher.
We get to see the Punisher, and we get to see a lot more stuff. Right off the bat, I want to say this was an awesome episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the Spider-Man animated series near its peak.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything I love about the show, and it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about.
Great.
So, where we last left off in the world of Spider-Man, there was a disturbing turn of events. He grew four extra arms,
mm-hmm.
and now he's truly sort of like a spider.
Yeah.
And I remember as a kid being very freaked out by this, that he would grow extra arms,
mm-hmm.
four extra equally muscular arms,
mm-hmm.
Fully grown man arms. They're not, there's nothing like weird or gross about them.
Yeah, it's not like a Deadpool situation with the tiny legs or anything.
Right, or they're not covered in slime or weird sinewy blood or bone. They're just fully formed.
Why would they be?
Oh, I don't know.
They just formed.
Yeah, they just formed perfectly.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, I think this happened in the comics, if the IMDb trivia is to be believed, which is interesting that the show really pays homage to, like, classic comic book storylines.
I mean, it happens all the time.
That's true, but I mean, this particular, I really thought this was just a show going off on a crazy tangent. I never heard of this comic or read it. I still might be mistaken, but I suspect it's true. But more specifically from the comics, we get the introduction of the Punisher, which I also believe the Punisher was introduced in a Spider-Man comic,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty cool and interesting. So, just like in the comics, the Punisher is introduced here. His main plot is essentially trying to hunt down Spider-Man. We'll talk more about the Punisher soon. But this episode opens with Aunt May discovering the aftermath of the Peter transformation.
Mm-hmm.
She finds his shirt on his bed completely ruined, which causes...
There's a bunch of holes in it. Yeah.
Causes her a great deal of anxiety. Does she think that it might be due to him developing pictures in his darkroom?
Maybe. There's chemicals involved, right?
Right.
Yeah, he has a fancy darkroom in his closet.
So he just burned his shirt or something?
I don't know.
According to Aunt May.
Or maybe it just got torn if he was in a fight or something.
Right.
But, no, the reason she goes into the darkroom is because she can't find him anywhere. She thought he was home. She looks around his room. She's right. Like, oh, he's not in here. Maybe he's developing pictures. So she opens the closet door to the darkroom. He's not in there. She goes over to the window, which is open, wide mm-hmm. open. And she sees a shadow pass by, and she gets, like, startled. And she says, oh, I'm jumping at shadows. And she just closes the window and leaves. She's like, okay, that's weird.
I kind of liked Aunt May in this episode. She wasn't so sad and lonely. She was a little angry and had just, like, one degree more agency than she normally does in this show.
Yeah.
But anyway, Peter observes Aunt May looking for him. And he's thinking to himself, as you see him with the six arms, sorry, Aunt May, Peter Parker doesn't exist anymore. Which is an awfully bleak assessment.
Drama.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, he's in a lot of trouble. I don't know what Peter is exactly thinking at this moment, but it can't be good.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he has some reason to be hopeful, which I was surprised in this episode how on the ball he remains despite the freakish thing that's happened to him
mm-hmm.
that's essentially forced him to... He's contemplating his life in the sewers at this point. He's really sort of laser focused. I guess he's hopeful that Mariah Crawford's going to be able to help him with mm-hmm. a cure. But until that happens, he's kind of really he's up Schitt's Creek here. Meanwhile, in some other random part of the city, we see a random crime taking place, which is usually it's a nice indicator from the Marvel gods that Spider-Man is not the only hero in town.
Mm-hmm.
This is the case in any superhero medium when you have like an interesting like sort of look over the river and another hero is introduced. You see crime being fought in other alleys. And in this case, your classic mid to late 80s punk band, punk gang has kidnapped a rich blonde white woman, and they're hoping they can get $1 million ransom out of her. It's stuff like straight out of a early Nintendo video game or Genesis game, like Streets of Rage. I think that's the name of the game. I can't remember right now. One of those Rage games, like where you sort of like walk across the screen in one direction, beating up punks. Anyway, so that's what we're dealing with. We see the Punisher sort of running around, and he's introduced.
Just like that.
Yeah, I mean, he's running around doing his thing, planting plastic explosive on walls, busting through, fighting bad guys. He's really good at karate or hand-to-hand combat anyway. He's got weapons, he's got gadgets. He rescues the girl, and he pulls out a gun, which the Punisher is known for, and he's about to waste one of the crooks who says, I give up. Mm. And he gives this little soliloquy about how, I don't think you should deserve to live, because you'll just get out of jail. It's the same old thing over and over. The Punisher believes in lethal force. He just believes in burying criminals when he finds them. So let's talk about the Punisher a little bit. In your own experience, what is your experience with the Punisher?
Almost none.
Really? You don't remember? I think
The Netflix TV show, that's it.
Okay. So there's that.
Yeah.
I think portrayed by John Bernthal in that version. He introduced in, I think, Daredevil Season 2.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really tortured, insane performance by Bernthal.
Yeah.
Bernthal is a really great actor. He's, like, a really great character actor. I was first introduced to him in the HBO miniseries The Pacific, which is the sort of unheralded sequel to Band of Brothers. And unheralded is kind of weird because there's a lot of anticipation for The Pacific because Band of Brothers was this enormous hit. Everyone loved it, about World War II veterans in Europe, the parachute division. The Pacific was like, oh, okay, now we're going to see what happened in that theater of war.
Mm.
It was the most expensive HBO miniseries ever produced, $200 million. I wouldn't say, I don't know if it was a hit or not. It's just not as, like, fondly loved and remembered as Band of Brothers is. And I'm only talking about because I just happened to rewatch this week. I was curious to see it again. And it's just so much darker and bleaker and way more violent, if that's possible. But anyway, I noticed that John Bernthal's in it. He's in a couple of episodes, and, you know, he's just a really good actor. So he was the Punisher.
Mm-hmm.
I watched, like, the first 7 or 8 episodes of Punisher Season 1 on Netflix. I don't think you watched it. Maybe, did you watch a little bit of that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very dark and sad show. Very hyper-violent. People really liked it. I think people were really pissed when Netflix canceled it.
It was in the same vein as the other Netflix Marvel shows. Jessica Jones and Daredevil and Luke Cage, you know.
Had, like, similar stylistic elements.
Yeah, it was as dark and traumatic as any of those other ones were. You know?
In its own way.
Yeah.
You know, right. Because the Punisher, they present him as, like, almost like a grimy, smelly, homeless man. You know what I mean? And, it, you know, it was a good portrayal. It had a lot of good twists in it. I never watched Season 2. Perhaps I should get back on it one day. But that's one version of the Punisher. Going back in time, you had Punisher Warzone. I forget the actor who played him in that, but he was one of the, like, main characters in the HBO show Rome. I think Titus Pullo, that's the guy, whatever that actor's name is. He played Punisher in Warzone, which was it's like a really fun cult movie. And I think I showed this to you once, too. It's it's even more violent than the Netflix series. It's, like, disgustingly violent. Gorily violent. Like, an unrelenting R-rated movie.
Yeah, I remember that movie.
Tons of murder.
Like, super weird lighting.
Yeah, I think the guy, Newman...
colored lighting.
Wayne Knight from Seinfeld plays Microchip in it.
Yeah.
The actor, again, so many HBO references. The actor from The Wire, who played McNulty, his name is escaping me. He's Jigsaw in that movie, and
right.
The origin of Jigsaw is so terrifying in that movie. I think he falls in, like, a glass machine recycler or something, where his face gets completely, like, scarred by glass.
Mm.
And that movie is worth watching because it's so over the top and ridiculous.
I'm not recommending it here.
You didn't like it as much, but I liked it, and it has, like, its own cult following. It's interesting to see nonetheless. And then before that, yeah, the weak Thomas Jane movies, which I think I only saw once. Those are not so good. Thomas Jane, another HBO reference. He was Mickey Mantle in the HBO movie 61. Mm-hmm. That's mainly where I know Thomas Jane from. I know he's done a lot of other stuff. And then before that, most infamously, and I've referenced it many times in this podcast, you had Dolph Lundgren. It's the first Punisher in the, like, 1988, 89, or 90 Marvel adaptation movie. Yeah, that also is an R-rated movie, I believe. It's a terrible movie. Fun, though. I haven't seen it since probably around that time, the mid-90s, when it was on television. But it's before Marvel was Marvel, at least cinematically. You know, it, like, he doesn't even have the skull shirt in that movie. He's just a lunatic that shoots people with guns. I just remember, the only subplot I remember, and I really do want to rewatch this movie too, there's some, like, whole subplot with this bum he's friends with who's trading him information, and Lundgren gives a very ridiculous performance as the Punisher. And then, you know, the Punisher, to wrap this up here, comic books-wise, he's... You know, the real name Frank Castle's family was murdered by the mob. He's a Vietnam veteran, at least in his original incarnation. And he's, like, he goes insane and he seeks revenge on all crime. He wants to punish everybody. And he's got no superpowers. He just goes around with his black skull shirt. In the Spider-Man show, it's blue. I think that has to be some kind of censorship note for whatever reason. I don't know why. Maybe it just fits in with the animation style. Anyway, he's blue in this version. He's traditionally black. He kills people. He's a badass. He's got a helper most of the time named Microchip. This dude, he's the dude in the chair, mm-hmm. like from like Ned.
Famous in Spider-Man,
right? Yeah. He's got a whole bunch of gadgets and technology. They kind of soften him up, obviously in this cartoon, but in the comics, he's a murdering psychopath. To me, I haven't read much Punisher in the comics, but the most memorable thing was when they had the whole original Civil War in the comics before they made the movie that is loosely based off it. The Punisher's on the side with Captain America, who's sort of rebelling against the system. And for some reason, I think they invite some criminals to the Captain America side to join their cause, and the Punisher, like, pulls out his gun and shoots them at the team meeting and kills them on the spot, and Captain America is so outraged, he, like, beats the shit out of the Punisher and ousts him from the group for being such a cold-blooded murderer. And Captain America's like, "Why don't you fight me back?" You know, as Captain America's beating the shit out of him. And Frank Castle, because he's a war veteran too, and he's like, "I can never hit Captain America." You know, like, he respects him too much. So that's where I remember him from the comics. Beyond that, I think he's an okay character. I'm okay with never really seeing the Punisher again. I doubt they'll bring him back for the MCU. Who knows in what capacity they'll bring him back, if any. Or if they'll invite John Bernthal back. I doubt it, because that's a Netflix property and those things are canceled. Who knows? All right. Anyway, but...
Just to be clear, the Punisher has no powers.
He has no powers.
He's like a Batman type of guy.
He's very similar to Batman.
Is he rich, or he just has stuff?
He's just like... He's definitely not rich. I think he probably gets his arsenal from, like, all the people he's killed. He, like, amasses. Mm.
He, like, loots all the bodies.
Yeah, but he, like, in the movies, like, he lives in, like, a warehouse or, like, underground. Like, he doesn't live anywhere nice ever. Mm-hmm. I don't really, you know the full comic book side of, like, his living situation.
But even if he was rich,
right.
He's, like, just so... grizzled that, like, he probably wouldn't spend his money on living someplace nice anyway.
No, he wouldn't. Yeah, because he self-tortures himself. I think that was a big thing in the Bernthal version. He wants to live in a completely Spartan lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like, torturing himself every day and, like, not eating good food or, like, doing anything.
Nothing matters anymore because his family is gone.
The only thing that matters is his mission to, like, kill every criminal he can come across.
Yeah.
It's a compelling, like, narrative for a character. You know, it's, like, definitely a product of its time when it was invented. Probably, like, I think it probably came in the late 70s, early 80s, Reagan era of, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, socio-political reasons why he appeared. Frank Miller, I think, made him famous. I forget who invented him. It might have been Frank Miller. But anyway, in this episode, it's cool. Like, the Punisher's, he's, like, a cool side character in the Marvel Universe. You know, like, especially the function he serves. Because he is really good at his job. So him going after Spider-Man's a big deal. Like, he can tangle Spider-Man, even though he himself has no powers. So back to this episode, Punisher rescues this girl. He's going to kill these guys, but the cops come, so he has to run away. We're introduced to Microchip, his helper, the guy in the chair. He's always trying to, like, calm down Frank Castle's, like insane brain. He's sort of like the one friend the Punisher has, you know, his one link to normal people. Mm. Microchip has his own reasons for helping the Punisher. He like helps him with his tech and gives him like information intelligence. Anyway, meanwhile, cut to Spider-Man. And now Spider-Man is the Punisher's next target. Microchip explains to him that by going after Spider-Man and bringing him in alive, you can get on the good side of law enforcement again.
Right.
Because he's wanted by both the FBI and the CIA, which is insane. Meanwhile, Spider-Man, he's back at home hiding from Aunt May. He's cutting up his spider outfit with scissors.
So he can fit his more arms in it, yeah.
Right. He happens to get a phone call from Mary Jane.
Inviting him to the movies.
Right. She's giving him a treat to a romantic movie. Peter rejects it in a very... He doesn't even think of a good excuse. That annoyed me. How
he has six arms. What do you want him to do?
He could just say, I'm really sick. It's not about you. I really want to go on this date. I'm honestly, Mary Jane, I'm very sick right now. I can't see you. Mm. Instead, he just blows her off. He's like, I don't have time.
Yeah.
And she's angry. She's like, listen, you've ignored me for weeks. You're blowing me off. I'm coming over there right now. We have to talk about our relationship here.
Yeah.
Like, they've obviously, like, they're more than just casually dating.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter messes it up. I've been yelling at Peter for these kind of mistakes. Mm-hmm. But he's in his early 20s. I think this is the kind of short temper you could expect from, a guy and a girl, too, when you're dating at that young of age. Like, you might not be so considerate in explaining your crazy actions.
Okay.
Anyway, so Mary Jane's heading over to Peter's house. Meanwhile, our pal Morbius, who turned into a living vampire because he stole Peter Parker's tainted blood sample and experimented with it, he's out there floating around, still draining people's blood. It's a problem. Peter goes to Dr. Crawford. She's shocked to see the extra arms on Peter. She takes a blood sample on him. She doesn't promise anything, like, I can fix you. She just says that the cure that you took before waiting, it's actually accelerating your mutation instead of slowing it down. Meanwhile, Felicia Hardy's on the news because she's been dating Morbius. She blames Spider-Man for
Morbius's disappearance. She thinks Spider-Man took him somewhere.
Because she saw Spider-Man swinging out the window or something, but it really was just Morbius turning into a vampire and flying away.
Mm-hmm.
So this sets off J. Jonah Jameson. He goes on TV again, like, urges New York City to, like, capture or kill Spider-Man. You know, he's had enough with Spider-Man. So Spider-Man's, like, problems are, you know, up to 11 again. Yeah, he's really in a lot of trouble. He's in, like, triple jeopardy. And then what happens next? Chip lays out the case to Punisher, saying, like we said before, if you bring in Spider-Man alive, it's going to help you. But he convinces Punisher to use non-lethal ordnance to go after him, which Punisher reluctantly agrees. Like, yeah. So Microchip's whole thing, which I like how Punisher calls him Chip, which is less nerdy.
Mm-hmm.
His whole thing is, like, making sure the Punisher is not... He's safe for Saturday morning television.
What is Chip usually short for?
Microchip.
No, for him, I know, but there's, like, guys named Chip, right? What is that?
Is it another different... Yeah, I was going to say Charles, I think.
Oh, okay.
Charles, Chuck, Chip... Chipley? Chipwood? I don't know.
Okay.
Chippy? Probably Charles. Any Chips out there, let us know. So Morbius, meanwhile, he's floating around the press. They're all whipped up into a frenzy because of Jameson. They see Morbius flying around a skyscraper, and everyone just assumes it's Spider-Man.
Because he's the only one that, like, flies around.
He can get that high.
Yeah.
That's a questionable argument. There seems to be a lot of flying characters in the show.
Also, the clothes are totally different. Morbius is wearing this, like, big purple cloak cape thing.
Right. Maybe they think, like, well, we've never seen Spider-Man without his mask. Maybe he is a freak underneath.
Uh-huh.
Like, he just doesn't have his mask on.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see them being confused. You know, Spider-Man is not... Even though Peter Parker has photographed him numerous times and put him on the front page of the newspaper. Like, really glamour shots of himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I find that a little unbelievable that they mistake Morbius for Spider-Man, but so it is. Meanwhile, Spider-Man goes to face Morbius. Which I was surprised that Spider-Man is, like, concerned with Morbius still, considering all his own problems.
It's because he feels guilty. Dr. Crawford is like, what are you doing? You're ill. You can't go anywhere. And Spider-Man's like, no, I have to help Morbius. Like, it's my fault that he's the way he is, you know?
Right. And they explain it later, you know, why Peter feels like this.
He feels responsible.
Yeah, but I was at first shocked, like, to his level of concern here. I also like that Morbius was shocked to see Spider-Man. He's like, ugh, what happened to you?
Yeah. Call him the Kettle Black.
Punisher's on the scene, too. We're getting a little bit more, like, layout, the way he operates. He's talking to his war journal through his fancy headset and like, red laser eye goggles. You know, he's very organized, very tactical. Spider-Man, you know, Punisher starts shooting at him. Spider-Man has a brief interaction with him. He sees the skull on his chest. He says, what do they call you, Bonehead? Spider-Man manages to get away from their brief first encounter, but Punisher launches a perfect shot, a little tracking pellet chip right on his ankle or his heel, so he can track to see where Spider-Man's going. You know, Punisher tried his best to get Spider-Man. Oh, actually, do they keep fighting here before Spider-Man gets away?
I mean, it's an extended fight scene. The Punisher has this, like, cool weapon that he launches at Spider-Man that's like a web in itself, but it's made out of rope.
Right.
And it, like, totally encapsulates Spider-Man, and then he, like, reels him up.
Right.
Almost like a fishing line.
And he's able to sort of get Spider-Man because he's doubling over in pain all the time. He still has his horrible stomach problems. It's not like he just grew the six arms and that's it. There's something else going on, too.
Right. The mutation is continuing. Right.
And
so.
the Punisher's using his famous battle van, which has all its gadgets launching out of it and cool technology. That's like very Batman-esque in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the Batmobile, basically. Or it actually reminds me more of the Ninja Turtles van from that cartoon. They had like a fancy van that Donatello builds, you know, that has all a bunch of like turtle technology in it. We also see the Punisher has a jetpack to fly around, so he can fly too.
Yeah.
He's basically, he's almost like Iron Man. So like you said, Punisher captures him in some kind of web gun. JJ and his news crew is filming all this. JJ back in the newsroom wants information on Punisher. Robbie, his assistant, gets some on him. That's where we learn that he's wanted by the FBI and the CIA. And it's interesting that Jameson, and unlike Spider-Man, kind of likes the Punisher. One, because he's going after Spider-Man. But two, I think, and they don't explicitly say it, but it's because the Punisher doesn't wear a mask.
Mm.
And Jameson's thing seems to be that he hates all people that wear masks because of his own personal trauma.
Right.
Like family or something being killed by a guy in a mask.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants to make a hero out of the Punisher despite being a vigilante. And then the Punisher and Spider-Man, they keep fighting. At one point, Punisher shoots another cool weapon at him that glues Spider-Man to the wall. Spider-Man does manage to escape, though, and Punisher promises to use lethal force on Spider-Man next time they meet, which Spider-Man just laughs at. He's like, ooh, what am I supposed to be afraid by that? Which I liked, because Spider-Man is constantly, people are constantly using lethal force against him, and he just gets away rather easily. Meanwhile, so Spider-Man finally gets away. Punisher, the police are now trying to capture the Punisher, who's glued to a wall by the spider webs, but Punisher, similar to Batman, he can escape any situation. He gets out of the spider webs, uses the battle van to like shoot lasers at the webs. He jumps like 20 stories out of the air, lands in the battle van. He gets away really awesomely. He has a parachute too, because his jetpack's full of web fluid. Meanwhile, there's more plasma victims on the street. Morbius is out and about. Spider-Man, like we said, why is Spider-Man so concerned about Morbius despite all this bad shit happening to him? And he explains why. So he flashes back again to his origins of where he remembers how he didn't stop the criminal that eventually killed Uncle Ben, so he feels guilty. He knows he always has to do the right thing despite whatever his personal trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So we get another scene. We feel Spider-Man's tortured pain yet again. Meanwhile, Mary Jane's at Aunt May's house looking for Peter. They're both angry and concerned. They have no idea where Peter is. They say it's not like him, which I find a little hard to believe as well.
I know. Aunt May has that line, and she says it's Mary Jane. She's like, it's just not like him. And I almost was like, Mary Jane, say yes, it is like him. He's a flake. He does this all the time.
He's a flake. He's also, I'm sure he's constantly never home.
Yeah.
Between being a college student and being Spider-Man and having a part-time job as a photographer.
Yeah.
And, like, all the other, like, I'm sure if he kept a list of all the times where Aunt May was worried where Peter was. So, Aunt May is a little insane here, in denial that Peter is missing. But Mary Jane has a lot of sympathy for Aunt May, so she promises to stay with her. Meanwhile, Spider-Man, again, Aunt May and Mary Jane, if they'd only, like, keep checking upstairs periodically, Peter keeps returning to his room.
Yeah.
He's tapping at his computer. He's trying to track down Morbius. Punisher, meanwhile, still has a tracker on Spider-Man, so he knows he's in Queens somewhere. He's stationary. So, you know, this is something where I always thought it was a little unbelievable how Spider-Man can keep his identity secret from so many villains that he has.
Yeah.
It's like if they only just ever, like, if anyone ever just...
Followed
him home. Yeah. He lives in a very nondescript house. It's not too hard to find him, really.
So
Punisher heads to Queens, to Forest Hills, more specifically. You see on his map. Spider-Man, though, he picks up on the trail of Morbius. He's, like, putting all these audio clues together. And Punisher's following Spider-Man, following Morbius, so Punisher thinks this guy's nuts.
Right. He's going in circles, but,
Right.
He's just following Morbius's trail.
I want to mention Punisher's voiced by veteran actor John Beck,
mm-hmm.
who his Wikipedia page is rather interesting. He did a lot of, like, TV shows over the years, like the 70s, 80s, and 90s. He was on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I kind of like this guy's version of the Punisher, very reserved and quiet and a little snarky sense of humor. Kind of like a less insane Wolverine, at least in the vocal performance. I was into it. So Spider-Man finds Morbius back at the Watchtower, where Morbius is, like, building some kind of technology. Spider-Man immediately knocks it over.
Yeah, well, because he, like, punches Morbius or something and, like, throws
there's,
him into
no it. There's no punching on the show.
Not punches,
right.
But okay.
He knocks
whatever.
Him over, right, yeah.
Knocks
kicks
him into it. Yeah, Morbius is like, you fool, I was inventing a cure. You think I want to be like this?
Right.
And Spider-Man doesn't say anything about that.
Yeah.
If I were Spider-Man, I'd be crushed. I'd be like, oh my God, I just, like, did something horrible.
Right. I mean, and it also, I mean, he knows who Morbius is. He knows he's a fellow scientist.
Yeah.
And he might be smart enough to come up with something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. It's kind of stupid that Spider-Man doesn't even comment on that aspect of it. So he breaks Morbius' technology. Meanwhile, Morbius flies away. He needs more blood. Punisher tracks Spider-Man to this location. Spider-Man peeks out a little hole in the Watchtower, and the Punisher blows it up with a massive heat-seeking missile.
Great. That's the end of Morbius' entire lab.
Oh, yeah. The whole Watchtower goes down. This is like a college, like... huge, like, piece of college property, right? That's what we established in the other episode.
We thought so, but then on the map, when you see where the Punisher is going, it looks like it's just some building in Forest Hills somewhere.
Yeah, but it can't be. Unless it's a different Watchtower. It could be a different Watchtower he's in.
Who knows?
It's not quite clear. I don't think he blows up the ESU Watchtower in Manhattan. So that's a little shady. Anyway, so Punisher is sort of, like, going into the wreckage. Does Spider-Man swing to another location at this point? Or is it, like, he just in this, like, burning wreckage somewhere?
No, he swings away somewhere.
Okay, so he swings away. Punisher's still tracking him. And, they're in a warehouse somewhere. And at this point, Spider-Man finally transforms into the hideous, massive monster spider.
Yeah.
And the Punisher is the only one the Punisher sees this, and he's the only one that can stop him, and that's where the episode ends. On a very sort of delicious cliffhanger, I thought.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's like a really... And I just like how the tables turn, because you're kind of rooting against the Punisher throughout this whole episode. You know that...
Right, because everyone at this point is Team Spidey.
Right, but they show how competent Punisher is, and they show how he has sort of a good heart. And so, in this moment, you're immediately on the Punisher's side at the end of this episode. Mm. You're like, oh shit, the Punisher has to stop this hideous monster.
Right.
And I'm sure that's what the Punisher's thinking too. I'm the hero of the story. I'm the one that's going to slay this beast. I have to protect the city of New York from this. So, and that's where it ends. So that's why this episode's cool.
Yeah.
Just I think, very good narrative storytelling.
Yeah, we got a lot less humor in this episode than we became used to in Spider-Man. I don't think it was as funny of an episode.
Well, the stakes keep raising.
But yeah, it was more tense and more action-packed, and we got a lot of good characters in this episode.
Yeah, and again, it's like, this is movie-quality storytelling. I really think that if you could do a Spider-Man-Punisher movie, like, the introduction of the Punisher is an iconic comic cover by itself from the original comic book, mm-hmm. you know? I think it shows something like Spider-Man in the crosshairs, and they show the Punisher on the front page, something like that. But the way it's told in this live-animated story, it's great, you know? It's like all the elements you would need for a movie. It's abbreviated because it's quick. I mean, there's going to be a part two to this. But still, it's like sort of on the edge of your seat stuff with a lot of ins and outs and interesting characters. So it just shows you just how rich and deep like the Marvel Universe is. And anytime these characters interact, it's interesting and fun. It really is. I think the formula for Marvel really is it. The crossovers are always going to be sort of more interesting than just the standard villain fights. Mm. And you see that in the movies, like the Civil War movie, where all the heroes have to fight each other. You know, the Avengers team-up movies in general, when they all meet and everything. Like, Avengers Endgame.
Everyone loves that.
Yeah, it's like a different thing than just trying to stop some easy bad guy. It's more abstract.
Well, it's like we were saying in the movie talk that we were having last week. It's like, it's about world building. When all of the characters are together, each of their individual worlds becomes more believable when you see them cross over with each mm-hmm. other, and it makes that universe richer for it.
Yeah, and there's just something about how you love the let's use this episode as an example. You love the character of Spider-Man, you're introduced to the character of Punisher, and they just show you how great every sort of hero can be or is. The Punisher is just introduced so well here with the way he can flip around and use gadgets and is very organized and smart. It's just satisfying, you know? So when he takes on Spider-Man, it's really good. I think it was better than when we saw Spider-Man fight Wolverine a few episodes back. I think, like, looking back at that, it was a cool idea that he meets the X-Men, but it was a little of a missed opportunity. It should have been a little bit more like this episode, I think. But here it's like they get the formula just right. So that's kind of all I have to say about this episode. So, Sonya, do you have any more thoughts on Spider-Man and the Punisher going forward with the Neogenic Nightmare?
No, that's it. We'll see some more Neogenic Nightmare next time.
I mean, I've watched this series several times through many times in my life. But I forget the details. I still don't remember how he's going to get out of this.
Yeah.
I know that, like, at some point he turns into the monster, as he did in this episode, and then, And then he gets out of it. Like, obviously, he turns back to normal. But I still don't remember how it's done. And it's exciting to wait and see, you know, what happens with Spider-Man and how this is finally going to get fixed. It's not a simple problem. It's like a really complex problem, relying on a lot of like crazy shit that has to happen and a lot of suspense and excitement. So those are my last thoughts in this episode. Very, very good classic episode of Spider-Man. Do yourselves a favor, like, watch the show. You know, I know it's hard to watch now. It's not on Hulu anymore. It might be on Netflix Canada, but, you know, just download the show from somewhere. I'm sure it's available on the internet.
We have no personal stake in this, by the way.
No,
we're just enthusiasts. That's all.
Yeah, I just really wish people would watch along with us. You know, I'm sure some of you are, but, like, it's just a really good show. At some point, it's got to be on Disney Plus, hopefully, mm-hmm. and they'll bring it back. Same thing with the X-Men animated series. Okay, that's the last thing I'll say about that. Now, on to the ending plug portion of the show. The first thing I want to say, follow me on Twitter, @WillieSimpson. And normally I just say that, and I don't really care if people do or don't. I still don't care if you follow me or not. That's fine. You don't have to follow me on Twitter. Not everyone has to use social media. But I am making an effort to post at least one Marvel-related thought on Twitter a couple of times, like, every few days. So I'm trying to use Twitter more. I want to just put all my... I realize throughout the week I have all these crazy random thoughts on the Marvel Universe, X-Men, Spider-Man in general, and I just tell Sonya in our apartment, and she just, like, rolls her eyes. Now I'm telling the world. So I'm going to make use of that Twitter. So follow me on Twitter @WillieSimpson. See my bizarre thoughts. Like, while Sonya, you were working today, I was at home. I was watching Iron Man 3 for the hell of it. I just kind of skipped around in it, and I noticed that Joan Rivers is in Iron Man 3. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my god. And so I just tweeted it out. I'm like, did everyone realize that Joan Rivers is in Iron Man 3? I just found that so bizarre to me. Another tweet that demonstrates my brilliance here is that I realized walking around the other day that I was like, Tilda Swinton, I really liked her in Avengers Endgame. Spoilers, hopefully you've seen Tilda Swinton's in it, I'm sorry. But I was like, Tilda Swinton, that's such a strange name. Oh, her name must be Matilda. That Tilda must be short for Matilda. So I tweeted that out as well.
So your next tweet is going to be Chip is short for Charles?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Better fact check it before you put it out there.
That's right, yeah. So follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson, Willie with an IE. Look me up there. Join the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. Talk to us. Have fun there. Rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes. And, you know, download and share. Let your friends know about us. And that's all I have to say. Sonya, do you have any final parting thoughts before we go one last time? See you next time.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.